Welcome to the Domestic Abuse Breakthrough Show, where we tackle violence against women and girls through education, empowerment, and hope. Join Kate, a survivor and advocate, as she shares insights, strategies, and stories that inspire healing and action. Together, we'll break the cycle and pave the way for a future of safety and strength. This show contains a trigger warning. And now, here's your host, Kate Beasley.
So welcome back to another episode of the Domestic Abuse Breakthrough Show. And today I am joined by Dr. Kate Truitt. Now, I've done some training with Kate. I trained in a technique called Havening Touch, which is an absolute, it is my most favourite trauma processing modality ever. I mean, it's just so nurturing. It's lovely. And Kate is one of the main trainers there, and she's a neuroscientist. She's the in-house neuroscientist for Havening HQ and a clinical psychologist. Welcome, Kate.
Lovely to be here, Kate. Thank you for the incredible work that you do and bringing so much wisdom and care to the world.
Yeah, it's there's so much work to be done, unfortunately. It's a very, very broken system wherever we are in the world. It's a growing pandemic in itself, as we know, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So now all of my work is centered around empowering survivors to really partner with their brain. Brain partnership is a huge part of my model and all of my trainings in terms of healing the past, creating the present, and supporting our systems and building towards the future that we want. So now I have a clinic here in Los Angeles, a training institute, as well as a research foundation. And all of those organizations work together to bring neuroscience into the field of mental health and fundamentally empower people on their healing journeys.
Yeah, and I know, as you say, it's the brain is there to keep us safe. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't always feel like that way at all, does it? But it is doing its job. And yes. And this is why when you're going through dealing with the police, dealing with family court, continuing mm-hmm. to deal with the perpetrator, yeah. it is very much a case of building and strengthening that emotional resilience up, isn't it? So that you can cope better and you can manage better, and you can bounce back a lot quicker when you feel those emotions. Because until the landscape changes, the brain will continue to do its job. Its number one goal is to keep you safe. And if the landscape is danger, you will always feel, and you'll still feel those symptoms of anxiety and trauma until your landscape changes. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things you're highlighting there, which is so real, is when our brain has learned that the world around us is dangerous, I like to liken it towards putting on what I call fear glasses. And so instead of rose-colored glasses, we're all familiar with that concept, we have fear glasses.
Yeah.
And these really primal parts of our brain, including even all the way down in our deep brainstem regions and our amygdala, come together to put on these glasses and say, this is how we stay safe no matter what. The difficulty is these brain parts are so ancient, Kate, that our brain is then responding to all sorts of different cues in our environment, even if we're now safe, even if we're now engaging in a system that is supposed to be keeping us safe. Like, and I know there's a lot of systemic failures, but working with the police department, family court, or even going into a new environment and trying to find a space here's how I go thrive. If our brain is still stuck in those fear glasses, we'll interpret a look from somebody, a tone of voice, even somebody moving too quickly as a threat. And then our sweet little brain will react to that rather than respond.
Yeah.
And that's where that brain partnership is so critical So we can go, oh, sweet little baby brain, sweet little Amy, the amygdala. Have that compassion to know that our brain is trying to keep us safe
Yeah.
and lovingly turn towards ourselves with that compassion, which then creates the neurobiological space for the resilience development.
Yeah.
Because when those fear glasses are on, they are running our lives. Because as you said, our brain's number one job is to keep us alive, and
Yeah.
it's really good at it. That's why we're here. You and I both.
Absolutely.
That's why we're
Yeah.
here.
Absolutely. I know you've just did it. You did a post only the other day on your Facebook page, and you talked about betrayal being one of the greatest pains we can sources of pain we can experience. And that is, I think that's so relevant for victims of domestic abuse and childhood abuse. It's the betrayal that is the hardest thing to overcome, particularly where when you're dealing with a romantic relationship, they sell you the fairy tale, and when you that fairy tale becomes a lie, you feel like you've been cheated. I know something that I felt quite a lot. It was. And I know a lot of survivors will say the same thing. When you experience abuse through pregnancy, and pregnancy should be the most beautiful time in any woman's life. But when you experience abuse during that time, you're robbed of what you should be experiencing with the pregnancy, with the birth, with the time with your newborn, that connection time with your newborn. You're robbed of it, and the betrayal is so relevant there, absolutely. And that can be something that can people can struggle to get over. It can take them a long time to get over that.
Well, and the betrayal of whether it be pregnancy, intimate partner violence, even in different communities that we're in, anytime we've built a space where we felt what that term fairy tale is so important, like this is meeting a core need. This is a space of safety. This is a place where I belong. And that is then taken away from us. And betrayal really is about the fact that nothing that we have done is wrong, and yet we're being punished or ostracized or excommunicated, exploited. And so often with betrayal, especially with survivors in these types of situations, in that betrayal, there's also this other through line that says, but you can come back when I say you're okay enough and worthy again. And so it's this deeply vicious cycle of ostracization, internalized shame and stress and fear. And then that little piece of hope that, oh, but if I do it okay, I can come back. And our brain gets patterned into these cycles. And then speaking to the point of pregnancy, there's that robbing. And I've worked with so many survivors who've experienced and witnessed, been through DV during their pregnancy, who have this double layer of incredible shame about not protecting their child, even in utero. And that's such an important part to acknowledge in the journey through the other side of bearing witness to that and holding that space and knowing that we stay because our brain's twisted in knots. And perpetrators are brilliant at twisting our brain into knots and turning it around so that we are gaslighting ourselves. We are blaming ourselves rather than being able to see clear to what's really happening in the cycle.
And but they make you believe that they can change
Yes.
and they will change, and you want to believe them so badly, because all you want is that perfect family unit. That you want that fairy tale that you've been sold, and every time they dangle that carrot,
I know.
you cling on to it for dear life, and you hope and pray that maybe this time will be different. But
Look,
the
and also it's so important to acknowledge change is really scary.
yes.
And so the carrot represents a way that we can stay in the good enough of right now, with the possibility of there being more of that good enough, and that the volume will be turned down on the horrible and the bad, as opposed to picking up and completely leaving and doing something different and risking that our community will not support us or protect us or show up for us. And all of that is part of the weaponizing pattern of the perpetrator. It's your fault. You did something wrong. If you were just better, if you had just X, Y, Z, that our brain learned, oh, these are all the things I need to fix. This is how I'm so broken. How can I go build something else? How could I leave? And so usually there has to be a big enough thing that breaks. And that's what's so devastating and horrifying, because even when that big enough thing breaks, our brain is now terrified. And we're also leaving with those ingrained patterns, those fear glasses. There's hope. It sounds so scary and hard, and there is hope too.
Oh, there is, and this is obviously what this show is about.
Exactly.
It's not just about educating and empowering people to advocate for themselves, but it's giving them that hope that actually there is light at the end of the tunnel. You can come through this and come through it stronger. And here's the evidence, because here's all these stories of survivors who have been through exactly what you've been through, and they've come through the other end stronger and more resilient.
Yes, the
You can
Phoenix
see that at
process, as
all.
we call it. We're
Yeah.
the Phoenixes. And the one of the ways I really have seen hope be powered throughout the course of my career is in sharing information about how our brain does all these wacky things and why, so that it lessens the likelihood in the aftermath of a shame spiral. I was reflecting this morning, and I know we're going to take a quick commercial break here in just a moment. I was reflecting this morning on an experience I had not too long ago, where a perpetrator from my own childhood had they would their eyes would change, and I would know when their eyes would change that the danger was coming. And when we circle back from break, I'd love to talk a little bit more about this, because it's so real: tone of voice and eyes.
Absolutely.
And this was 6 years ago. I saw the eyes change, and I went flying backwards through a screen door. The screen door fell off the hinges. And that person had done a lot of work, which is why I was in their space. They actually had gone into the other room. But my sweet little brain, my little amygdala, was in hypervigilant, full alert. As soon as I saw those eyes, I went flying backwards, run. And I didn't even recognize it until I was like, came out of that reaction. I was like, okay, everybody's staring at me. I'm used to running headfirst into a screen door because I'm not paying attention, not flying backwards through one because I'm having a fight or flight response.
I
Yeah,
always this
so
is what I
basic.
always say. I always say this, that the look and the tone of voice
Yes.
can have such a greater impact than anything the perpetrator could say to you.
Yes.
And
Yes.
that is the hardest thing for a victim to articulate to an authority figure. How do you articulate, "Well, I'm fearful"? Why are you fearful? "Well, he looks at me a certain way." How do you articulate that? You can't rationalize that. And it's very difficult, very, very difficult. But quite, I mean, I know with myself, it was the look had a greater impact than any. I mean, words, I would always challenge him back. I mean, I would always come at it from a fight flight response. But the look, that was enough. Like, we need to back off now. That's it. The line's drawn. Now we need to back off. We don't know what territory we're walking into now.
Yes. And so I was just at a training with Frank Corrigan and Doctors Frank Corrigan and Ruth Lanius, which was amazing, on a new modality called deep brain reorienting, and really looking at these old through lines, which we've known about for some time. One of my original theses was written on these constructs called the predator eminence continuum. Notice the word predator. And then that evolved into the Bradley and Lang's defense cascade. And what we're looking at is the physiology of these very, very primal orienting responses. And what you just described so beautifully there, Kate, is the tone, or not the tone, the words involve prefrontal cortex. We're not working at primal if somebody's talking. That orienting response, the eye change, the tone, the jaw, those experiences are ancient. That's brainstem. And when we see that as a survivor, our brain, just like I described, right, flying through that screen door, goes, that's a predator. And when we see those micro shifts in a perpetrator, they're going into predator mode. It's not conscious. And that's that really painful, hard thing to describe. And coming out of the training, this is one of the things that I was really reflecting on, is we need to create a space where this language is more common. And I speak about it from time to time. I write about it in my memoir. The periaqueductal gray plays a key role here. And it doesn't get a lot of airtime thinking about these primal brainstem responses that are 40 milliseconds. So the amygdala is at 75, four times faster than the blink of the eye, the amygdala is responding. These are responses that we're reacting to at 40 milliseconds, almost two times faster than the amygdala. So the power of the tone of voice in those eyes cannot be understated.
No, absolutely not. So we're just going to break for a short interval and we shall see you back in a minute.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink. Perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active. Available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well Pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So welcome back. So we're talking about the looks, how powerful these looks are, and they can, can't they? They can, you know, you can. We were just talking before, you know, in the break, that you could have a pang of anxiety come out of what is seemingly from nowhere, and actually, it's not from nowhere. It is encoding that has taken place potentially very, very, very early on in your life. And it could be a word somebody says that triggers those wounds, triggers those amperceptors related to that emotion. And your amygdala is going to be alerted to danger in a split second. And you may experience some, a pang of anxiety, and then suddenly it's gone. Because actually, once your active thinking brain's kicked into gear and it's checked its landscape, the danger's gone. It's like, oh, no, there's nothing here. You can step down. But that doesn't, because all this is done unconsciously, you're not aware of this. All you know
Exactly.
is you're experiencing these pangs of anxiety. What is seemingly out of nowhere and repeatedly all the time, and it's affecting your quality of life, and you don't know what to do about it, and it will all root back to the same thing. And again, this could also be the cause as to why you've been attracted to the perpetrator in the first place. It's familiar. I know we talked about before the break. Leaving is scary. Leaving is represents uncertainty,
And our
and
brain hates
it
uncertainty.
absolutely does. Yeah, it represents more danger than staying in the threat that you're currently living in. Doesn't like uncertainty.
Well, and what you were just sharing there about these future effects of these types of situations, and this also goes back to that conversation around betrayal, is our brain has again these really primal brain parts built into it that become hypervigilant. And specifically, one part of the brain that I'm really fascinated by, which I love, is the periaqueductal gray. I just call it Peri for short. And I like to think of Peri as our bodyguard. And Peri, if he survived really intense trauma, has learned to consistently be vigilant around other humans. This very ancient part of our brain starts constantly scanning for tone of voice, for that shift in the facial expression, a change in the eyes. And if that's experienced, whether it's at us or not, but especially if it's towards us, there is going to be a rallying of our survival systems into a response. And so even if we've left the environment or we're not around our perpetrator, this part of our system is still scanning. And so many survivors that I've been very blessed to walk alongside have experiences where they feel like they finally have a safe community. And then they do experience betrayal, a real betrayal within that community. And recently on that post, you were talking about so many people. I mean, so many people, Kate, reached out to me, DM'd me, texted me, called me, emailed me, were courageous and posted directly on that post how they've been through a version of the betrayal that I was describing. It was prolific. And when that happens, even if it's not tied to our immediate perpetrator, our brain still interprets it and responds the same way. And I'll even give an anecdote of something that happened to me a few months ago. I heard the tone change. I knew the situation would never be the same again when I heard that tone of voice, and I collapsed. And in a meeting, I've just felt myself completely collapse. And there's a recording of the meeting, and I rewatched that meeting, and I could see my young, collapsed self showing up at 43 years old in this meeting. And that information is so important because I also want to highlight this is what I do for a living. Literally, this is what I do. And it still can happen no matter what we think we know. And that's so often where we get in these shame spirals is I know better. Why did I have that reaction or that response? And it's because it's these primal brain parts that are in responding to an immediate threat signal in the environment, trying to keep us safe, not recognizing we're no longer in that environment anymore. We actually are safe. And that's a huge part of the healing opportunity. And that self-compassion going, oh, baby girl. It's okay, baby girl. It's okay, brain. You tried. You did the thing.
And there's so many layers to trauma, and people would think that because we're professionals in this space that we wouldn't experience, and we do, because we all do, because you're always going to experience traumatic events. traumatic experiences, because it's not the event that's a problem, it's the emotion that's the that's the issue. And it's that what that's that is what we need to, we were going we're going to keep feeling, but always going to feel it.
It's just we want to feel it in a fleeting, healthy way when there's a real threat, as opposed to, as Dr. Louis Cozzolino discusses, that 90% of our past guiding our present, and then those threat glasses, those fear glasses, when we are survivors. And that's the opportunity of brain partnership and neuroplasticity, of helping our system change. But that's also why, as practitioners, as allies, as anybody who's walking alongside survivors, we need to be trauma-informed.
Absolutely.
We must understand and require of ourselves that we learn and grow and expand in this field, so that we're not accidentally engaging in a way that is dangerous to a survivor or actually going to cause more harm. That's part of the power of changing these systems, which I know is so much of the work that you do, and I do as well.
And this is a failing in police forces. You know, victim, when we're talking about betrayal, victims look to police, in particular, for safety. That's we look to them for safety. And if a victim is being faced with victim blaming and shaming, or just completely dismissive of what they are, what they're describing in their experiences, that can lead to a really serious state of betrayal. Because I'm come to you because I needed help. And that's taken a lot of courage for a victim to do that. It's taken a lot of strength for a victim to reach out to the authorities. And if then they're faced with complete betrayal, and, you know, heaven forbid, you know, it is the more extreme things. I know recently there's been two women come forward in one of our local police forces, Greater Manchester, who were charged with malicious communications after reporting domestic abuse, because they were essentially mithering and pestering and, in their view, making a nuisance of themselves. And they were obviously, because they were operating from fight flight, they were being quite verbally aggressive towards the police when they were trying to get their attention, and that's resulted in them being charged with malicious communication, which is absolutely disgraceful. And this highlights the importance of them being trauma informed. How can they work with traumatized victims in any capacity, not just domestic abuse, in any capacity, and not be trauma informed?
Well, and it's a failing of the larger system. The concept of, and just to contextualize, the idea of trauma-informed wasn't even around until around 2011, 2012. And SAMHSA here in the United States actually put out a formal operational definition of what that means. And it's become quite buzzy. And yet, if we look at all of the different jurisdictions around the world, there's different operating definitions of what trauma-informed means. And who's supposed to be trauma-informed? What does it look like to be trauma-informed? How does this get integrated into the work that we do? Is it a clinical consideration? Is it a systemic consideration? And so there's so much confusion there that I think in a lot of ways, and I've seen this in, even recently in an organization I work with, it just gets brushed off saying, well, it's good enough trauma-informed because we talk about trauma. And it's like, well, that's not what trauma-informed means. Just because you talk about trauma doesn't mean you're trauma-informed. And how do we, as practitioners, as leaders in this field, and this is a call to action to you and I and everybody listening to this podcast or to this recording, is how do we start to be a voice for change that says we need a foundational understanding of this, so that we're coming through the same lens of what this means? Here's what it looks like, and here's what it feels like. And what you describe about with those women is devastating, because really that's their brain going, see me and hear me, protect me, I'm in danger. See me and hear me. And that is so common, especially for, I mean, any survivor, and especially survivors of childhood trauma. And the courage to use one's voice. So it ought to be honored. But that fight and flight piece is so painful.
Because I did a recent interview with a friend of mine who owns a domestic abuse charity in Brisbane. And as she said, we are already minimizing what we've experienced. So take what a victim is telling you and understand it is nowhere near as bad as what they're telling, that they're far worse than what they're telling you, because they're conditioned to minimize. They've been coached and coerced into minimizing and concealing the perpetrator's behavior. So it's a natural default. And in the back of their mind, they'll be thinking, well, if you don't take this seriously, I'm in a lot of trouble here. So they will naturally fall into that protective mode of, well, I better not tell them everything that's happened just in case they don't take me seriously, because the more I share, the worse it's going to be for me.
And also the self-doubt and the shame, that internal gaslighting that starts to flow through the survivor system of, well, it isn't that bad. How we start to train our brain to minimize it internally, to say, well, it is my fault, that shame and the guilt that becomes an inherent part of the world we're living in.
Yeah.
The idea of, well, I've let it happen for this long, so I guess I must have been doing something to contribute here. I have been complicit. And so when somebody finally puts their hand up and says, no more, which has been a through line of a lot of my posts lately, especially these past several weeks coming out of, you know, beginning of November and being here in America, how are we really looking at that no more piece and understanding what you just said? That's the tip of an iceberg. There's so much pain and damage and wounding that has happened underneath that no more energy.
Yeah.
When we finally get desperate enough to say, I can't do this anymore. When the brain finally says, uh-uh.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's what professionals need to understand, is that when a victim is reaching out, it is at that stage of, I can't take anymore. I physically and mentally cannot take anymore. Mm-hmm. It's become too painful.
Yes.
I want help.
And to highlight that painful piece to what you shared earlier, Kate, about the words, the psychological violence.
Yeah.
That is so frequently the thing that breaks the back. That's such a terrible analogy, but here it actually works, because I've worked with survivors who've sustained and lived through broken bones, but that wasn't the thing. It was the thing, it was the word, the look, the tone. It was that psychological piece where finally it's no.
Yeah.
Yet you had a guest on not too long ago who was talking about that escalation of the psychological and physical violence, and that, well, they hadn't actually hit me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then in my mind, there's like, but there's many versions of what being hit looks like.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to leave a physical bruise. Being hit is a psychological experience. It's an emotional experience.
Yeah. Punching walls, threatening to hit you, threatening to throw things at you. They've not physically done it. They've not followed through and injured you, but that threat is still there.
And also one of the individuals who reached out this past week was sharing with me about, and this was in a corporate environment, the ostracization, the defamation, the destruction of character and reputation. And I've worked with so many survivors who, and I'm like, I've got a list that just rolled through my head, who are in really powerful communities where their partner, or whether it be a business partner or an intimate partner, completely ensure that they are ostracized through lies, exploitation, and manipulation.
Yeah. And they most likely will have
agony of that.
And they most likely will have threatened them, planted that seed over a long period of time. If you do not comply, or you walk away or leave me and take away my control, I will do X, Y, and Z, which is exactly what my ex did to me. He laid the foundations in advance to use certain things against me. And this is what many, many perpetrators do. They will, and a common one is making the victim feel, and I didn't experience this one, but feel like they're the problem and there's something psychologically wrong with them. You need to go and get help. So therefore they go along to the GP. They describe what their symptoms and what they're experiencing and how they're feeling. And then before you know it, they're labelled as disordered clinically on their medical file. Well, that's perfect for the perpetrator. Because
and
when
they can weaponize it.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that is what they do.
And then there's the shame, the isolation, the fact, oh, people are going to hear about what's happening and what's wrong with me. One of the things that I've seen time and time again, and I'm even witnessing this in my own journey, is most people see what the perpetrator's doing. People are attuned. And so often that shame and that isolation where the victim crawls into the hole and hides away terrified, when there is the courage to reach out to the community and trying on a couple small safe voices play first, so often the community reaches out and says, no, I see you. I know what's been happening. Thank you. I didn't know how to communicate with you. I didn't know how to reach in. I didn't know how to help you. Or you're not alone. They did it to me in this way. Or you're not alone. This has happened to me in my journey. And that's part of the Phoenix Rising experience.
Yeah.
But we have to transcend that shame and the ostracization first. And that's in ourselves when we've been living in this cycle and pattern of abuse and psychological manipulation.
Yeah.
But we're not alone.
No.
We are not alone.
Now, we're just going to break for a short interval, and when we come back, we're going to talk about how we can move forward from all of this and create a happy, happy life, because you can create a happy life. So we'll see you in a short minute.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with a skin comfort formula online and in stores now.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So welcome back. So moving forward, Case, how do we, I mean, obviously we've talked about how much damage it causes, and it isn't, I mean, obviously we've talked a lot about the psychological damage and impact, but obviously, as we know, all that psychological trauma and impact also has a detrimental impact on our physical health, doesn't it? Yeah, I mean, autoimmune disease, cancer, yeah. High blood pressure, gosh, heart problems, you know, all these things are directly associated with trauma.
Impairment in the way our brain is functioning.
Yeah.
Brain fog, migraines, fatigue, yeah. Memory impairment, all of these experiences come together.
Yeah.
And so not just does it feel disempowering in our external environment, but our internal environment and our mind and body just feel so weary and exhausted.
Yeah. And I mean, I've suffered with, I've had Crohn's disease for many, many years. And I had bowel surgery. My bowel perforated at the peak of the abuse that I was experiencing. But I had it in the ostomy as a result of that, and I had that reversed. And I remember when I was having the scopes to obviously check that everything was okay before the surgery, my consultant said, was trying to persuade me not to have the surgery. And she said, well, you know, I said, but it's everything's all trauma related and stress related. She says, well, I understand that, but you can't control your stress. I said, well, that's actually not true. And I remember having a conversation actually with Dr. Rudin, Stephen, and he said, when you deal with all or process all of your trauma and you've time-stamped everything, you won't see anything of your Crohn's ever again. And it's funny because, as you know, I've just come back from Kenya.
Yeah.
I kid you not, the whole time I was in Kenya, I was absolutely, I had no problems whatsoever.
Lovely.
The day I landed back, it was like a switch that went off. So it goes to show that your environment impacts.
A huge role.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely it does. So this
I want to just in the veil of being trauma-informed, I want to caveat that statement from Dr. Rudin, because false hope always makes me very nervous.
Mm.
And yes, we can do a lot of really important healing around our trauma. We can build a lot of neurobiological resilience.
Yeah,
that doesn't mean that the physical, all of the physical shifts that we're experiencing will go away.
Mm.
And so somebody who specializes in the treatment of chronic pain and chronic illness, that's such an important piece that really in a trauma-informed way needs to be highlighted.
Yeah, but obviously it manages your symptoms. So, I mean, I've experienced it firsthand. You know, when I have an escalation in symptoms, I know that I know it's a result of my environment.
Absolutely. Yeah. And those autoimmune disorders, as somebody suffers from an autoimmune disorder myself, when the stress goes up, that absolutely escalates.
Absolutely.
And with chronic pain, when the stress goes up, the pain worsens.
Mm-hmm.
And our brain and our mind-body system plays such a key role in that, for sure. And it's an opportunity, again, to pay attention to the world around us and the choices that we're making.
Mm.
So in my book, Healing in Your Hands, there's an entire program that is about the self-healing brain partnership journey. How can we use our mind-body system's innate opportunity for healing? And the YouTube channel is a huge resource, and it's World Health approved as a resource for helping people do this type of internal work. It's, what's so exciting is, yes, we react to the world around us, and our mind-body system has these innate capacities for healing. And that's where we can use tapping, where we can use mindful touch and breath work, these internal ways that our system can adapt and change the way we're reacting and responding in the moment.
Yeah.
Regardless of our environment.
So we, you know, as we say, we do have control over that. You know, we have control over our healing. And there's so many things, as Kate was just saying, that you can use in your every, you don't have to actually, obviously it's obviously beneficial if you can go to a therapist, but you know, you can do certain things on your own, which will build your resilience up. And that is the most vital part, is you building that resilience up, so that, because we're not going to walk through life and never experience trauma ever again. It's just not the way the world is. But how we manage and how we cope with those challenges that we face in day-to-day life, that we do have control of. And by implementing just some basic techniques in our daily life can make the world of difference, can't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And coming from that space of personal empowerment and agency and partnering inward to create those healing spaces, as you're just describing, and in Kenya, the environment was different. And so your system was different. And because you had done so much of your own healing work, as Dr. Reardon was highlighting, your system was able to be in this different space while in that environment.
Yeah.
And the opportunity is, how do we create these spaces when we're living in our day-to-day lives with intention? And how do we cultivate the self-compassion to know that our past may still show up at any point in time, because life happens and our brain has been through things, and turn inward to come home to ourselves? It's honestly, therapy is a privilege.
Yeah.
Mental wellness is a human right.
Yeah.
And our brain and our body are innately endowed with the capacity for self-healing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I always refer to it as a muscle. The more the more work we do on it, the stronger it becomes.
Yes.
And the quicker it will implement and work for you, the more you do it. Whereas if you have a long gap, you are like, if you go to the gym, you don't go to the gym for ages. You will have to work harder to build up that resilience again. But once you've built up that resilience, you feel or experience a negative feeling, you will bounce back much quicker. So it really is in everybody's interest to make this a priority. And teach our children. You know, we need to teach our children to make this a standard thing that they do in their life.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Absolutely. And that's the goal, right?
That's absolutely the goal. Well, thank you, Kate. It's been absolutely wonderful having you on.
Thank you.
And all Kate's details will be in the show notes. If you want to go and check her out, like I say, Kate's mentioned her YouTube channel. She has lots of exercises. Again, her TikTok channel as well. She does cough quite often, does things on there as well. But yeah, YouTube channel has lots of little exercises that you can implement yourself using the touch. So I'll see you on the next episode. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Kate.
Thank you for listening. To learn more about Kate's work, head to her bio on UK Health Radio. Until next time, stay strong, stay informed, and always remember, you're not alone.